All those good songs. I got a little dry mouth, so pardon me. Okay, so my name's Terry Mears. Here's the clicker, I guess. Big button in the middle?
No,
I'm sorry. Oh, darn. I got that wrong. My name's Terry Mears. I am a father of three grown boys. I am a awesome grandfather of one super awesome grandson. I don't get to see him enough, but he's going to be one in December, and I'm really proud of that. And I also have two wonderful daughter-in-laws. So I've done a lot in my, as you can tell, I've got a little whitening in my beard, and that means I've done a lot. I've done some things in the corporate world mostly in my entire life, but God has kind of directed my journey, and that's kind of what I'm going to speak today a little bit about. Up until about 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more, I was doing corporate stuff, but then I was also transitioning into doing my own work. And that work took me to do some things that were very much out of my comfort zone, just as speaking in front of you guys today and knocking over my coffee but didn't spill. So my sermon today, if I do this right here, is called Your Gifts, Your Gives, and Your Gets. I know that sounds cute, but if I just kind of advance it a little bit, I rewrote it a little bit, and so I'm going to take some of the things that I've done as a mental performance coach and give you guys some tools from that as I take you through my journey and what has led me to branches, and then some other things that are included here. So kind of in my purpose and his plan, that's the next sermon title. It's the same sermon, it's just a different title. It's about your gifts and your purposes and your journey. The gives are your time, your talent, and your gets are the ultimate reward. So in Proverbs 16, it says, commit your works to the Lord and your plans will succeed. Now, I've always thought it was my plan, and then I realized as I got older that it's not my plan, it's his plan. And it seems simple, right, just to do good works and things are going to work out. I'm going to put you down there, knock you off. But it takes intentional effort. It takes continual surrender. And here's the one that until about 4 or 5 years ago, I really hadn't done. And that's to give genuine trust to the Lord. Let God do the work. Let God do the plan. And you just take his push in the back, his shove in the ribs, whatever it takes to do things. So I'm going to kind of connect the dots here a little bit. God's gifts lead to, and I'll throw a little scripture along here too. You can look those up when you get a chance. God gives us certain gifts. He's given everybody gifts. Not any one person is left out. They're all unique as well. Just as everybody's face is unique from one to the next, the gifts are unique as well. The gifts turn into ability. He gives us the ability to do things. That ability turns into doing good deeds for others. And then those good deeds can help others. And guess what that does? It takes the gift that God gives you and gives a gift right back to God by honoring him and glorifying God. And that is really the reward. So that's kind of a preview of what I'm going to talk about today. A couple things here. I'm going to get my notes here since I got to read a couple things. Woo! Catch up here. Okay, so you can commit your work to God by honoring him with your efforts, valuing the people you interact with, faithfully returning the tithe, promoting truth and love, living graciously and generously, thoughtfully utilizing your time, and we're going to talk a little bit about that part, and then leveraging your God-given gifts to glorify God. So God gives us this timeline, let's say, and my timeline and his timeline interact, but not as he would like to have it, because I'm flawed. I don't think perfect exists except for Jesus. So my path is not what God decides, and that's kind of that straight and narrow. But mine kind of, it's like if you ever remember, at least my age, there's a comic called Family Circus, and little Jeffy is one of the little kids, and he's sent to go run an errand by mom, and instead of just going straight there, he goes all around the town before he finally gets there, and there's a whole yuckity yuck about that. But that's kind of how my life has been too. I've found different places where it interacted and intersected with God's plan, and so I'll kind of talk about some of those. First of all, I grew up, whoops, let's see if I can go backwards. I grew up in Wichita, Kansas, Central Christian Church right downtown was the church I grew up in. I was lucky to have two parents who made Sunday a priority of time together as family and time in church, attended Sunday school. There was a time about, I was 8 years old right before my ninth birthday. It was Easter Sunday, and we held our church service down at Century 2 in Wichita because our church was big enough for seniors that would push past our limits at the church. So we ended up at Century 2. It was a song that was being played as the altar call called Just As I Am Without One Plea. And I ironically heard that on the way here today. Alan Jackson was singing that. But that's when I kind of felt the Lord push me out of my seat. And I went to my dad and said, Dad, I think I'm ready to go and commit my life to Christ and bring Christ into my heart. I'm 8 years old. What do I know about Christ at 8 years old? But it's God's plan. It's God's work, right? So we did that, and later on, as I got older and I had a job and moved to Woodstock, Illinois, this little tiny church, First United Methodist, I became a Methodist in college and kind of maintained that. Somehow I found out that I needed to have some sort of a promotion, and it took me to Chicago, and I couldn't afford to live in Chicago, so we lived way out in a small town called Woodstock, Illinois. Found out as we were looking at a house out there and ended up buying one that they were just wrapping the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, if anybody remembers that. It's one of my favorites. But right there in the town's square, it wasn't in Punxsutawney or wherever that in Pennsylvania. It was in Woodstock, Illinois, and that's where they were filming that. But that's a good memory. But at that point, I went from a sales career, which I was talking to one or two people across the table and had good interactions and sold a lot of products. I was in the hardware business, door hardware business with Schlage-Lock. I was promoted into a regional headquarters in Chicago area. And I didn't have a clue about speaking in front of people. But I found myself in front of 500, 700, even 1,000 people at our sales conferences having to talk about the new products that we were coming out with. And boy, that was not comfortable. So the pastor of this church says, if you want to get past public speaking, why don't you sing in front of a congregation? Well, this is not a big congregation, but I joined the church choir. I learned the songs. About a month into it, I was up there to sing a solo. And I'm not a great singer. But I sang the solo, and that really got me over the stage fright. But it was really, again, God's plan directing me through that. Further on, moving to Olathe, Kansas, years later, this is going through a difficult, very difficult time with me personally. I was battling with depression. I was going through a divorce with a wife who just couldn't find her own way after losing her father. Some things triggered from traumatic childhood. And we just couldn't find each other. And I was doing a horrible job of being both a father and a husband. But I decided I would plug back into the church and found this church that I had been going to when I first lived in the Olathe area. But it was at a junior high school back then. Now it's a big church. And so I jump in. And the first song I hear, because songs are really a memory for me, was a song called the Revelation song. And if you ever heard Carrie Job sing that song, it brings tears to my eyes and the hair stands up on the back of my neck. But that made me feel like I was at home. I was back at home. I was in the church. And a couple Sundays later, my son, he's about 8 years old, I'll say. And he says, Dad, where do you go on Sundays? And I'm just going alone. And I said, well, Dad, Devin, I'm going to church. Why don't you come with me? And he goes, yeah, I'll go to church with you. He didn't know, I have a clue what that is, because we hadn't been going to church. We've been dealing with turmoil for really 7+ years at that point, and a divorce was imminent. So he comes to church with me, and he likes it. And a couple weeks into it, he gets involved with the youth program. And that was amazing, because 6 months later, and this is the God moment, I hadn't even thought, I just know I needed to plug in. But I hadn't thought about being a father that led my son into the church. And 6 months later, here he is. This is the baptismal. It's called Indian Creek, or was. They changed the name. Indian Creek. And they made a little creek with a baptismal in it. So I was able to actually be in with the baptism. And that was the most amazing, amazing times of my life. And I felt God was present in his life, in my life, and everybody around us. Unfortunately, the divorce went final. And I found out that I was going to be a single father. I literally raised him from that point on. My ex-wife had moved away to kind of heal and get better from some traumatic things that happened to her in the past. And I became the single father. So I had to stop all the stuff that I was doing as a whatever, you know, going to work and all these different things, and really focus in on him. He had special needs. He had Tourette syndrome, which was a mild case of it, but still it left him with some behavior issues and some lack of social skills. But that boy, he's 25 years old now, and he's graduated from Wichita State. He's a computer nerd like you wouldn't believe, and he's writing stuff in software right now that hadn't even been invented yet. So I don't even know where he got that. It wasn't from his dad, that's for sure. So that was a very proud moment, but that was a very intersecting God moment. My plan, God's plan, intersecting. At that same church, I needed fellowship. I needed men. I needed iron, sharpening iron. So I joined this group called Men's Fraternity, and it's a 3-year study. Guys don't commit to anything past 2 weeks, trust me. But this is a 3-year study, and you had to commit to it. And the first year was about unpacking a lot of the wounds and different things that you went through as a child that you didn't even know affect you as an adult, but they do. The next year after that was, we called work and winning at home, but it really was about being a better father, a better husband, a better coworker, a better friend, and just a better person. And then the third year was finding out what your gifts were. And there was literally an exercise that took 6 months to uncover what your gifts are and then how to apply them. And that was a life-changing situation for me because I became a single father at that point. I had really no plan for what I wanted to do. I was getting really tired of corporate America and that whole stuff. So, but it was at this time that, again, God just said, you're not just going to be in this group. 3 months into it, the leader decided he'd go off to another church and asked me to take over. So I took over where I was supposed to be the one getting, you know, soothed and whatever. I end up having to lead the thing, and it worked out fabulously. So that's another God moment. And then this is the most recent. This is where I lived in Houston. There was this thing, this community that had a 12.5-acre lagoon. You can kind of see it. I call it 12.5-acre swimming pool, but they call it a lagoon. And there was a church planted right there in our community where we met on Sundays at the little little patio, little overhang kind of outside of there. And it has grown. It is that's not the church. That is an elementary school, but that's a big elementary school. And we have our Sundays now and there. And that was sort of a God thing too, because I was looking for a men's group all over Houston, Texas when I moved down there, and I couldn't find anything like Men's Fraternity, and I was really sad. But somehow I ran into this guy, Kyle Jackson, and Kyle says, "Why don't you just come help us plan this church, and maybe at some point you'll lead a men's ministry there." And I said, "Okay, great." It wasn't ready for that. It was ready for small groups. So within the small groups, we did some men's ministries, but then you do what small groups do. You just kind of serve out a little bit. But it really was there that I learned what foster care system was all about and how horrible it is when the government gets involved. When politics and the government get involved in people's lives, it really is not very helpful. And I learned this firsthand volunteering with this group, Sanctuary Foster Care Services. And my mission became helping biological families stay together, because what happens is when the state gets involved, they want to separate the kid from the child until they can go through adjudication, which could take months and years in some cases. And it's really horrible for the child because the child is moved every 6 to 8 weeks in Texas in the foster care system. That's not acceptable. I got hooked up with this group called the Care Portal. And that is something that is now in Wichita. And I'm trying like heck to bring it to Butler, Marion, Greenwood. I don't care what other counties are outside of Sedgwick County. I've been meeting with them quite a bit to personally try to sponsor Care Portal to come into our communities. But what Care Portal is a place for needs at the family level. And if those needs can't be met by the state, they never are. A church can step in, or a number of churches could step in. One of my favorite cases was this gal, sweet gal, God-loving gal, church-going gal, who had a 13-year-old daughter. She lived in a trailer, and it had leaky roofs, and she slipped and fell and broke her ankle in that trailer. And when her daughter told that to a friend at school, the counselors have what they call mandatory reporting and took that daughter away from her. put her in respite care, which is good because respite is usually typically within the family, and there's some guidelines around that. But what she needed was somebody to come fix that roof. And it wasn't just one person. I was the orchestra conductor. There was a guy from NASA. He had just retired. He has all these tools and know-how. There was this other church, this Catholic church, who provided us the funds. And we put a new roof and rebuilt the flooring of her trailer. And we made that thing livable for the next, for how long. And guess what? Her daughter was able to move back in within a month and resume the mother-daughter relationship that they enjoyed. That's one of the cases of many. And I know there are those that happen here in the counties we live in too. So I am fighting like heck to get this wonderful thing, which is just a piece of software really, but it's all the churches that come together and provide care into a child's life, whether it be in the case of Branches, a new child, or in the case of the foster care system, and a child that just needs direction and hope. So, take a drink real quick. This is my journey. And it literally is a journey. It starts in Houston, Texas. I popped up in March to go pick up a couple friends that I went to high school with. And we were going to go out to Beaufort, South Carolina to go surprise one of my best friends for his 60th birthday. He lives way out in South Carolina. He didn't think anybody was going to show up. We decided to take a big, long road trip over the course of a week. We even went to go see the Ark Kentucky, and that was really cool. There, if you ever want a history lesson on what Noah was all about, that's a good place to go. But anyway, we're about right there where that X is, and that's right where the Ark is, that my friend Alan's wife, Dina, came along, and she's on the board of this pregnancy center, and I don't know anything about a pregnancy center in mid-March of this year. Not a thing. And she's talking about they don't have an executive director. There was some turmoil in the past. There were some structural issues. There was this, that, and the other. And my friend Alan, the next morning, he gets up early. He's got to feed his chickens and his horses and everything before he goes into work. He gets up early to make breakfast, and I'm up early. And Alan says, "Terry, did Dina, that's his wife, tell you the name or tell you more about this, and are you interested in something like this?" And I said, "Well, here's how I would fix the problem." And I equated it to a tree. I don't even know what I said, because God, I think, was saying these words, but I equated it to a tree, and then the thing has branches, and the fruit are on the edge of the branches, and all this different stuff. And he looks at me, and he goes, "Did Dina tell you what the name of this place was?" And I said, "I have no idea." He goes, "It's Branches." And that's when I knew something was about to change. I was shutting down my business, which I was doing fundraising for schools and some churches. Unfortunately, I thought I was there to help kids, teenagers, stay in school, stay in sports, not end up on the streets and do things that happens in Houston, Texas. And instead, it was a lesson of what greed and corruption could look like from some of my competitors. But I was also learned how to be a mental performance coach. So I'm going to take you through a little bit about that. But I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to take my hands completely off the wheel. I think I've done this before, but I haven't really. I haven't literally been submissive to God and say, this is what I need to do. So 2 weeks later, I am on a Zoom call with the board at Branches. 2 weeks later, I come into El Dorado, Kansas, and sit down with the board. 2 weeks later, they send me an offer to come be the executive director. I had not planned to sell my house. I had a business to shut down, but I loaded up my truck. I didn't even wait to sell my house. I just loaded up my truck and put as many things as I could, found a place to live, and ended up in outside of Wichita. So you all know what Branches is. We do free sonograms, free pregnancy tests. We have wonderful counselors. Some of you are in the room who work with these ladies who just need to hear about God and know that they're going to be okay. They're empowered. Not only are they going to be okay, they're empowered to be great mothers. And we also serve men as well. We have 15% of our clients are men. We have a Bible study. That's not something you see in normal cases, but we got a lot of ways to touch people, and I'm really thankful to be there at this point. I was telling Dan that some days I get so excited about what we're going to do that day that I forget to shave. I'm not sure if I've got my shoes and socks, you know, match. I'm just wanting to run out the door and get things done. And we've done a lot. I'm really proud of everybody who's been involved in it. In 4 or 5 months, we decided it was time to, we had outgrown our space, and it was time to move to a bigger space. We had no idea what we were going to do, but God did. And God put us in a new building about, what, 3 months, three weeks ago? We're still building things and stuff. It's amazing, though, what God can do. You all were part of that process in the baby bottle campaign. And that's critical, because if we're not doing it with the churches, we're not doing it the right way. And so we want to do more with our area churches. Burns Countryside Church was able to provide enough for 6 medical-grade pregnancy tests and 250 diaper changes. So if you think just a few pennies and nickels, dimes, and quarters and baby bottles is not going to add up to much, it really does. It really does. And so we appreciate that so much. This is the part that Dan kind of previewed that I took him through, because while we're a pregnancy center, we have the opportunity to do so much more in our community. We have, like I said, anytime the state gets involved in things, and we don't take any money from the state, so to speak, they kind of wreck things a little bit. What people need is support. So we're taking what we do for families, and we're going to add on resources. We have vetted almost 100 different resources, most of them free, that somebody who has a need for something, say transportation, or I can't even think of all the things. There's a huge list. Let's say they're in an abuse situation. We can't help them, but we know who can. We've vetted them, and we will help them that way. So that's the resources part. Here's something that the government does not like to talk about, and that's mental health. Mental health is one of the biggest issues that's not talked about in this whole political landscape that we're now talking about here. And we think that we could do something to help, even if it's at a lower level. We think that we could help people with things like trauma, abuse, and even addiction as it relates to the situation that got them into the pregnancy center in the first place. And so that's kind of our vision for the future, is we want to add on to be able to be the one source that can help anybody who has any issues. We want to be that resource. So that's kind of where we're going in the future. We're not there today, but the overall goal is to break generational cycles. And we know what that looks like, from abuse, trauma, addiction, alcoholism, drugs. We know what that looks like, and all people need is a little bit of help. And so that's our long-term vision and goal. And I'm very hopeful that that together we can all get there. So again, my journey is not like, my testimony is so much different than most. God come in, I plug out, God plugs me back in. It just kind of goes like that sometimes. Here's where I'm going to transition a little bit to the gifts part, to the giving part. If you think about it, what is your purpose? How do you know what your purpose is? I have a friend, his name is Bill, and he's been out of work for a year, and he's a software writer, and he keeps looking for a job in the same sector of work that he doesn't even enjoy. And he keeps asking me, how do you know what your purpose is? Well, let me take you through a little bit about that. First of all, if you open your heart, that's where the seed is. Love comes from your heart. Jesus is in your heart. It all comes from there. But you all know the rest of this. You plant a seed, you give it sunlight, you water it consistently, and you watch it grow and bear fruit. Well, if you're never moved, you need to move. And so the whole idea is just to get moving. They say in procrastination, that's something I know all about, it's the start that stops most people. For me, I had COVID really bad for about 6 weeks, and I was out of energy and just not myself. And I knew that I needed to go out and walk every day. And so if I put the shoes by the front door, that was the start that didn't stop me. Those shoes were there for a reason. I put those things on, and before you know, I'm out the door and I'm on my walk. If I don't do that, I'm probably going to make an excuse that day. Oh, it's too hot in Houston. Oh, it's too humid. Oh, it's raining really hard. It rains super hard there. I'll give whatever excuse it is. But the fact is, the shoes are right by the front door. I put them on. Within about a year, I've never really worn out a pair of shoes. I did when I was a kid all the time, but not as an adult. I wore these things all the way down. I mean, I should have taken a picture, but I didn't. But anyway, it is the start that stops most people. You have to move. You have to get up and do something. Nike had a big campaign calling, just do it. Well, that's kind of part of it. There's another saying, though, too. Do a little a lot versus doing a lot a little. Now, if I make an analogy for that, let's say you want to lose 20 pounds. You get a gym membership and you go to the gym and you work out for 2 straight hours and you are pumping iron and you're feeling good and you're like, I can do this, you know, 5 days out of a week. Then the next morning happens and you are so sore you can't get out of bed. What's the last thing you're going to do that day? Go to the gym. Yep. Versus, okay, I'm going to spend 15, 20 minutes on the treadmill. I'm going to go the next day. I'm going to do a little bit of arm work, barbells, simple things. And then you just kind of build on from there. You're not as sore or you're not, you know, as tired and whatever. But you end up over a course of a little bit of time seeing results. And so that's what that little saying is all about. Now, the 1% intention, this is really fun. So if you have a pot of water at 209.88 degrees, what do you call it? I call it really hot. But if you add 1% to it, you got something that's a total different thing, a boiling water. Water boils at 212 degrees. A lot of things can happen with boiling water, but that's just by adding one more percent. So here's kind of how it all works. There are 1,440 minutes in a 24-hour day. 1% of that day is 14 minutes and 24 seconds. That's it. So if you do something 1% of every day for a period of time, you're going to find out you've actually accomplished something that you never thought you would do. It's kind of called, what are you going to do with 15 minutes out of a day anyway? You're going to scroll social media. You're going to watch a half of a sitcom or play a game on your phone. Wordle's my new favorite. You might waste that time. Instead, find something that you want to do for yourself or for others and invest that time. The compound effect, which is a strategy of reaping huge rewards from small, seemingly insignificant actions. That's doing a little bit, a lot. And this is interesting that it's now called the compound interest effect. If you do that 1% better strategy every single day for a year, compounded interest, the same thing you see at the bank, tells you that you'll be 37% better by the end of the year than you were when you started. And that's an amazing thing. If you were to learn a new language, if you're going to learn how to play guitar, it could be a number of things. You spend 15 minutes out of your day to do something where you're learning something that to make you better, you're going to be better. In this case, it's numerical. 1% today equals 37% better in a year. Now, you're not going to be Eddie Van Halen, if some of y'all know who he is, but you're going to be a pretty accomplished guitar player if you do that for every day. So, interestingly enough, before I get to this, I had a chance to speak with 150 female athletes at Texas City High School and take them through the 10 pillars of mental performance coaching. And we talked about this. And I talked about the fact that what do you do with the first 15 minutes of your entire day, right when you open your eyes? If you do something positive for yourself for that 15 minutes, 10 minutes even, before your feet even touch the ground, you're going to start on a positive note that day. If you, like I used to, open your phone right when your eyes go open and you start looking at the notifications that you missed overnight or you're looking at social media and you see a lot of negativity in there, you're going to start off with a negative balance for the day. If you start with something positive, you'll get something positive that you can actually build on. Well, I gave this talk kind of over 6 weeks' time, and I went through the 10 pillars of mental performance coaching, and the girls would come up afterwards. Or actually before the third session, they told me, the one thing that I think I found that I do differently today is that I open up my Bible app. I read something out of the Bible on my app for that first 15 minutes before my feet ever touch the ground. And my day starts off so much better than it used to, which was, oh, I read social media, oh, this person's drama is this person's drama. and ended up, you know, sluggishly getting myself to work, or work, school, they're in school. They said, now they find something positive that they can build upon, and they can get to school, and they can feel energized when they get to their first period. And I thought that was just an amazing testimony that out of all the things I was trying to teach them, that they took that one piece. So that was kind of amazing. So whatever it is you want to accomplish, if you know what it is, but you know why you want to do it, you're going to be that much more successful. Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. So the Lord puts that purpose in your heart, and you just got to let it happen. And that's kind of where I was. One of my favorite lines and I've kind of or scriptures, and I kind of put this in as our theme for branches, is I am the vine, you are the branches. And what it really says is that that God is the one who's in charge, and you can't do any of that without him, but you can do everything with him. So in my case, I'm going to go past this one. In my case, it was, I'm going to go past all this for time. In my case, it was learning that what to serve others, and my why was ultimately to honor God and to give those gifts that he gave to me back to him. For some, though, change is hard. There are 100 different excuses that people give themselves for not just doing it, not just stepping up and making things happen and letting God's plan take over. You might have the old excuse that I'm not good at this, or I don't know how to do that, or my dog ate my homework. That's a good old excuse. But here, if you're taking notes, write this down. This is really powerful, and this is where I'm coming to a close. If you argue for your limitations, you get to keep them. If you say you're not good at something or you don't know how to do something, that's a limitation, and you just bought it for yourself, and you own it now. But if you agree with and trust God about your potential, you get to grow into it. So say it again. If you argue for your limitations, you get to keep them. If you agree with and trust God about your potential, you get to grow into it. And that's, for me, that's very powerful. That's something I want to put on my refrigerator, because I started the day just saying I'm not a gifted speaker in front of people, but that's a limitation. Now I would say, I agree, God's got to take over, God's plan is the most important, and I get to grow into it. So we get down to the reward part, and this is critical too. The reward is honoring God. But you get something back. You get, if you are doing something, especially for other people, you have stronger self-worth. You get to influence others. Leaders are just influencers. They're not necessarily anything else. And then you get a Mrs. Fields cookie. Wait a second, Mrs. Fields cookie. Here's, back when I was in Illinois and our headquarters was in San Francisco, I had to go out one time and give a short presentation to our board. And it's in this big, huge building in downtown San Francisco. And as I'm coming out of the board meeting and heading down the escalator to go outside, there's this really, really attractive woman. And she's got this bib on that says, or an apron that says, Mrs. Fields Cookies. And she's holding a whole plate of these warm chocolate chip cookies. And I'm getting down closer, and I can start to smell them. And I mentioned she was pretty. She was very pretty. And I get down and she goes, would you like a sample of Mrs. Fields cookies? I'd never heard of that, but I love chocolate chip cookies. So I had that cookie and it was warm and it made me feel good inside. Now, when you do something for somebody else, whether it be spare change in a baby bottle, taking wallpaper that's 30 years old off the wall and repainting a room and furnishing it with furniture, or putting together furniture to help a pregnancy center grow, you probably leave that day going, wow, that was hard work, but it sure felt real nice, just like that Mrs. Fields cookie felt right here in my stomach. So I'll close this in prayer, if you'll bow your head. God, you are so generous. I can never outgive you. We can never outgive you. You are the giver of everything good in our lives. Thank you for that. Help us to have a heart of generosity that reflects your heart. Thank you for inviting me to trust you with everything I have and everything that we have. All glory to you, God. In your name we pray. Amen.